Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Blue Wire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup, oh, blocked by James! It's over, Cleveland is a city of champions once again!
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton, some rhythm,
and he got it, young ball continues to wear him out!
Do you know what the Cavs fans are calling the Darius Garland, Colin Sexton backcourt?
What?
Sexland.
Oh, that's good.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Cleveland Cavaliers are on a three-game winning streak, including back-to-back wins over the Brooklyn Nets. To help break everything down with me is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
It's going great. How about them Cavs? This How about them Cavs? Blowing me away right now. I was just sitting there like seizuring watching the game last night. I was watching on my phone because I was hanging out with Kylie, and she was just like kind of gave me a couple looks like, what's wrong with you? And I'm just giddy, man.
I got the same looks from Trish as I was sitting there cheesing.
Yeah, it is so fun watching this team play right now. They ran the Nets off the court in the second game without Kevin Durant. Sexland was reunited. Darius Garland looked good. Colin Sexton followed up the best scoring night of his career with maybe the best playmaking night of his career. Yeah. Jared Allen went on a 5-minute stretch that utterly destroyed the Brooklyn Nets. This was the two home game stretch that everything you could ask for.
Yeah, it really was. And like by the end, the Cavs were toying with them. Like I think Garland, it was great to see him back kind of doing his thing. It makes such a difference to have a point guard. They played more games without a point guard than they have with one this season. But like he was pressing a little bit and trying to show off and excited, but he could because they were up comfortably. Like they were handling the Brooklyn Nets. And I mean, that play to Jared Allen was just... That like the speed of Garland to get that loose ball and then immediately place that perfect lob for Allen. I scared my dog. I was jumping off the couch. Like this is some of the most fun I've had watching the Cavs in a very long time.
I mean, how could you not? I mean, they were having fun. They were flexing on him. It was really fun to watch them attacking with Jared Allen as a lob man. Even when it didn't make sense, they were throwing lobs. Like Larry got a perfect duck in the dunker spot where he just could have gone up and flushed it and threw the most needless lob to Allen in the world and ended up going out of bounds. Cause like they just have this new toy that they're having a blast playing with. We just saw, if you're watching us on Periscope, we just saw them. They just shredded the Nets with double drag actions with whether it's Larry Nance or Taurean Prince at the four, guarding, with Darius Garland running the pick and roll on those double drags. It was just perfect. Dylan Windler cooked them on a couple great threes, as you just saw. It was just everything you could ask for.
Yeah, and Taurean Prince, man, like, if this is who they're getting, I don't expect him to be this good, but, like, the Cavs play a ball movement style. Like, once they have their guys out there, they like to pass, and that fits into what he was good at when he was playing in Atlanta, right? The teams that make the extra pass, and it's a really seamless fit. It's I know they had the time off because of the two games postponed against Washington, and they actually got some practice time, which is kind of rare in the situation. But for pieces to always be coming in and out of the lineup and for them to just click, like plug and play, it works, is really, really impressive. And I think we're at the point that, like, the Cavs have an identity. Like, we are learning what this team is, and that's kind of an exciting spot to be at this early in the season.
Yeah, so I think identity is something that the team is hammered, and I think we should talk about it, about the identity they're developing on both the offensive and defensive end, because we saw it early in the season before the team got just, you know, obliterated with injuries. And it was, we kind of started to notice, like, hey, this team is winning and is being driven by its guard play. And I think we're really going to start seeing that happen more and more now that they're healthy, because they are what drives the engine. We thought it was going to be, you know, the big men playmaking for a second, but really it's going to be Sexton and Garland that make this offense hum.
Yeah, I agree. And looking at it now, like, I think it's a good time to kind of take stock of where we're at right now. I think you have two guys that are proven in the NBA and are foundational pieces, and that's Colin Sexton and Jared Allen. I think right now the comparison has always been Portland. I think we're building more Utah. Like, that's your Mitchell and Gobert, and kind of the X factor is the fact that you got Darius Garland, who has tremendous upside, Isaac Okoro, who, man, like, he really held his own against Brooklyn, and now that he's not really being asked to do too much on the offensive end, it's starting to come together just a little bit more. Like, he's not being asked to dribble the same way he was now that Garland, Sexton, and the rest of the perimeter players are out there. Even Taurean Prince helps make things a little easier for him. So
sure. What I'll both say as well, though, so the guards are going to be the straw that stirs the drink. Sorry. And what we're finding with these bigs is they're going to use their bigs as chaos engines, as vertical spacers, they just destroyed Brooklyn on the boards. And while Andre Drummond is a member of this team, which I think might be a little longer than people think right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
While Andre Drummond is part of this team, they've got bigs who can absolutely punish teams on the offensive glass and clean up anytime the guards aren't able to get all the way to the bucket or generate a clean look. And what's also nice is that their bigs are good enough passers that they're play connectors. I mean, we talk, Andre Drummond is going to catch flack all year. Mm-hmm. And when he tries to face up DeAndre Jordan, he's going to catch it. People are going to get frustrated, and I get that. But you know, I think what we got to see in this Nets game was kind of what we should see from him for the duration of his Cavs tenure, which is they are now at a staffing level that they don't need him to eat up post-up possessions anymore. But what they can do is use his very, very good passing as a big man and his elite offensive rebounding as a play connector and a play extender. And we're actually kind of getting to see on some possessions when he's playing the way we're hoping to see him play, the kind of the ideal version of Drummond on this team alongside a Jared Allen, who obviously fits in perfectly.
Right. And I immediately thought of you that time where he made the kind of touch pass from the top of the key down to Nance for the dunk. And like it, I do think that he still brings something of value. Like, it's exciting. Jared Allen, like, early on looks like the better fit and possibly the better
which we player. Thought which right. we thought was going to be the case,
right? But it's nice to see it in practice, right? Because if it wasn't kind of clear cut, like, you still don't doubt Jared Allen, but you say, okay, this takes a little bit more time. But the fact that it's a seamless fit is obviously encouraging. But in the meantime, Andre Drummond absolutely helps this team, and through a very difficult stretch of the season that's coming up. And when the young guys are playing this well, like, you don't want to stop this, right? Like, you want to kind of keep feeding the beast and see, okay, if we are an engine that's being driven by our young players, that's supplemented by these veterans that fit well with them, how far can this team go? And I'm kind of excited to go through this gauntlet now. Like, I was dreading it, but like you got these tough games against the Celtics and Lakers back to back. Then you got four easier games. You play the Wolves twice, Detroit, and I forget who else. But like, they might be in a decent position going into a challenging February, and you'll be able to take stock of just how good this team is.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what we think this team is going to be, I think I was last night, I was ready to just say they're a playoff team. That's how fun that game was. After sleeping on it and reevaluating that February schedule, I think I'm still going to keep my powder dry on fully proclaiming that. Yeah. But you're right that how they survive February will tell us everything. And that's actually really, really important, because this team basically needs to decide if they want to be buyers. Yeah, because they do have assets. They do have some positive pieces they can move around to maybe go chase a John Collins or their four of the future. I mean, you've been throwing out a lot of fake trades. Do you think they should be buyers? Because I think the answer is no, but not for the reason I think you think I'll have. But I want you to answer the question first.
So I think that's an interesting question, because it depends how you define it. Like, some people would say that trading Andre Drummond isn't buying, that's selling, right? Because you are losing a guy that's a former All-NBA player, an All-Star, who's played really well for them. What I would say is there are five guys I would not want to see moved, which is Sexton, Allen, Garland, Okoro, and Nance. Like, to me, that is kind of your core. And if you can go out and you can get a young player that fits alongside those guys, maybe it's not even in a Drummond deal. Maybe it's like Torian Prince, Jetty Osman, and picks that get you someone that's kind of more in that $15 million range. Because it might be tough to get a young player that matters, that you would get excited about for Andre Drummond for $28 million. So it all depends on how you define it. I would try chasing another young player to fit with this core, because I do think that they have a legitimate chance to make playoffs. And like, we're finding out that there actually are foundational pieces on this team already. So I would at least explore the market. I wouldn't make a trade just to make a trade, but it would be something that I would pursue.
Here's the thing here's the biggest reason I don't really want to make a trade right now, is I just want to see what this roster is. Mm-hmm. I want to let these guys, and obviously, you know, I'm pretty amenable to moving a guy like Drummond, because I think that, you know, we know he's not a future piece at this stage. Like, even whether he is a good soldier and contributes through the end of this year, you know, I'm not as interested in learning about him, but I want to give Dylan Windler as many minutes as I can get him. Mm. I want to continue to give Jetty his run. I want to give Sexland as much run as they can in the backcourt. I want to give Jared Allen and Larry Nance a lot of time together. And the more bodies you bring in that you're going to be foundational, the less there is to learn. So I'm just not in any hurry, I guess, you know, like, I think that sure they're, I think any move they're going to make at the deadline can be there later on in this offseason. So, you know, I think we're really going to learn a lot. You know, is the deadline the 21st? I think it normally is.
It's late March, I think.
It's late March.
I believe so.
Okay. Well, either way, like, so you look at this February schedule, if you're watching on Periscope right now, it's tough. You know, you got Minnesota, but then you got Clippers, Bucks, Suns, Nuggets, Blazers, Clippers, Warriors, Spurs, Thunder. Like, until you get to that Thunder game, those are all very, very losable games. The Cavs might be, maybe Vegas will change their mind about this Cavs team eventually. But as of now, those all look like games the Cavs will be dogs in.
Yeah, and to cut you off, it's March 25th. So really, the Cavs have a large period of time here to make an informed decision on what direction they want to go.
So that's why I'm in no hurry, I guess. You know, like, I want to kind of see what this roster does for a while, you know, with the only exception being Drummond.
Yeah. You got 2 months, buddy.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. But I do think we'll learn whether this team is, you know, if they get through that February stretch, not unscathed, because I just don't see a world in which they, you know, they just roll through it. And if they do, then I don't even know what to
If they're still at 500, it's okay. We got something time. Like, it's all right. Time to start.
Time to start assuming. It's time to start assuming playoffs, and or not assuming it, but making that the goal. And I think that we do need to have that discussion about whether this team should shoot for the playoffs. I know where we're going to land on it, but I think our listeners need to hear it anyway.
Yeah, and before we go to that, I do want to discuss something, and this is going very counter-brand, and I'm going to be a bit of Debbie Downer here, because I think we do need to talk about the KPJ trade. We've already kind of said our piece about the off-court aspects, but we do need to discuss it from a team-building standpoint, which is, this is a move that there is no winning for the Cavs. Like, you move KPJ for a pick that's unlikely to convert, you open up a roster space, but like, this is a setback, right? Like, you add a piece that's foundational in Jared Allen, and you lose one that you thought was a foundational piece in KPJ. And it's like, it's difficult, but I don't think that this was a decision that's made lightly. I don't have any inside information here, but for the Cavs to go from saying someone's untradeable in trade talks, the highest upside player, the guy with the clearest path to stardom on the team, and then move him for a pick that won't convert, you just can't imagine that that's something that the front office would take lightly. And this was probably a difficult decision. I don't think it is as simple as, well, they moved his locker, he got upset, and they just gave up. Like,
yeah,
that's a pretty big change to make. And that's probably not something I could see them doing lightly.
I would strongly recommend, because I have seen some of these takes go on where people are kind of implying, like, I can't believe the Cavs would move on after one incident. You know, like, locker room blowout. The locker room blowout sounds bad, but like, the fact that they moved on after that seems like, you know, premature. I would say, you know, I mean, you don't have to be super sourced to kind of follow the breadcrumb trail here, and see that this was kind of a move months in the making. And no, the Cavs are not going to win here. Either KPJ washes out of the league and no one wins, or KPJ figures it out and the Cavs will, you know, I'm sure there will be the finger wagging, the I told you so-ing from both Cavs fans and the general NBA public. But I will say this, you know, and we could not be more clear that we are not mental health professionals. We are not, this is a very touchy subject, but the reality is, you know, there's a reason people, this is not a linear path. If mental health was a solved problem, I think the world would be in a very different place right now. So even if the Rockets find a way to support KPJ and whatever problems that he has are plaguing him get turned around, I don't think that necessarily means the Cavs blew it. You know, I just think, like, this isn't an exact science. So maybe the path the Cavs chose wasn't the right one, but it's kind of hard to know right now, you know? So ultimately I just hope the best for the kid. Everyone seems, he's one of those guys that people seem to love, even though he is not, as you know, he's lovable by all reports. He's just
right,
not consistent.
And they've been consistent in saying that they believe that he's a good kid, and like, that's why they made the gamble, right? Like, they believed in him. They traded the 4 second round picks and cash to bring him in, right? Like, they understood what they were getting into, and they understood that it was a calculated risk. But sometimes you have to make these tough decisions when you're trying to establish a culture. Like, they don't have a proven culture. Like, they are taking the right steps towards it, but it's still kind of in its infancy here, right? Like, and you have to protect that. And sometimes you have to make these difficult decisions. And I don't want to turn into Miami Heat beat here and just say culture, culture, culture. But sometimes you got to kind of preserve what you have going on. And I think another aspect of this, and you mentioned it before when you're talking about, hey, like, I like what they got going on. Like, there's a lot of guys that need minutes right now. KPJ coming into the mix, he's not going to be getting the minutes he was getting at the start of last or the end of last season right off the bat, right? Like, he'd be kind of near the end of the rotation. How does that impact his mood? Like, how does that impact the locker room? Like, there's just so many variables there. And when you do kind of have the kind of core four or five guys here, if you're including Larry Nance,
which I can understand. At this stage.
Yeah, I understand not wanting to mess around with that. So I hope he does well. Like I think part of them sending him to Houston was, and this was reported, because John Lucas is there and like Steven Silas, like the guys that probably could help and kind of give him the support he needs. So I hope he ends up being really successful in Houston. I hope it ends up working out for both sides, but like, you're not going to win this trade because of something you got in return. And it's okay to admit that.
Yep. That it's a blow for the rebuild, but you know, the rebuild is, seems healthy right now. Yeah. So I think that were the Cavs having a different start of the season where they were, you know, 3-12 or, you know, something in that neighborhood, I think we would be feeling very, very different. It's a lot easier right now to say, I wish the kid the best as a fan, but the Cavs have something here right now. And yeah, it's just been a really, really fun stretch. And I mean, like, where do you want to go next in this conversation? Because there's just so much fun to talk about right now that I'm almost feeling a little bit at a loss. I gravitate towards the Sexton conversation.
Yeah, I've got something weighing on my chest, and like I've been wrong so many times about Sexton. Like I was out at the beginning, then I became high on him, then I realized I wasn't high enough, and now I gotta admit that I was wrong once again. Like, comparing him to Donovan Mitchell, like, I need to set the bar higher. Where are we going from here, Carter? Where are we going from here?
Gosh.
Like, he's an all-star right now, right? Like, if the Cavs stay in the playoff picture, he has to be an all-star. Like, they're not going to play an all-star game, but it would be really funny for him to be a rising star snub 1 year and then eventually get it because of injury replacements, and then the following season be an all-star. Because, like, what he's doing right now seems sustainable. Like, Brooklyn adjusted in game 2 and they were really trying to prevent him from going off, and he was making good decisions. Like, he was out there, he got the 9 assists, he was probing offensively. Like, the growth with him, he's like the Raptor learning how to turn doorknobs. Like, he's learning at all times.
Yeah, I mean, everything about his game is growing. And I remember explaining to a more casual fan during his rookie year, who he asked me about what I thought about Colin, and he mentioned the speed, and I kind of talked about how in his rookie year, Colin was someone who didn't have functional speed on offense in the half court, because, you know, he couldn't get guys' hips turned. You know, that guys could, if you backpedaled properly and you had good defensive fundamentals, he couldn't generate good angles. You create buckets. And you look at his run against the Nets in that double overtime game, and the way he was able to generate good, clean looks, it was just something that was just not there early in his career. And I do think it's really important to say that there's two things that we can say here. And this isn't a self-preservation, because we show our ass all the time on this podcast. We make terrible takes. But
man, it's the best part. Like, that's when we get to sit in our mistakes.
Yeah. But what I will say is that there are people who will take this run from Colin and say, he's always been this. And I'll push back pretty hard against this. And I actually, not because I think that I want to look smart and Colin has made us look stupid, but because I think it's actually insulting to the work Colin's put into his game. I mean, the level of craft he has added attacking the basket, whether it's his floaters, whether it is his handle. I mean, the play, and if you're watching on our Periscope, you'll see it. The play to end the second quarter where he rose and then scooped the layup. Like, he had no craft like that finishing around the rim. It was either he had the angle for a clean layup or he didn't. And now he has all this craft to his game. The pull-up game is there in a way that was not there, especially his off-the-dribble threes are just stunning. I mean, the sidestep to ice the game over Jeff Green in double overtime. His polish as a scorer has gotten so much better, and that's not even mentioning the other parts of his game that have grown.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we got accused of it early on of kind of moving the goalposts with Sexton, which I kind of view it more as clearing hurdles. Like, this guy continues to add, we'll criticize something, he adds it to his game. And maybe it's not fair to say, okay, this is who he always was. I think you're right there. But I do think that the valid criticism was the work ethic was at this level, that you could see him improving. And yeah, he's not doing it well yet, but because of the dedication he has to the game, you could see this growth coming. I still think, like, there's tons of guys. Like, look at DeMar DeRozan. Like, it took him a really long time to figure it out, and that guy is, by all accounts, like, great teammate, gym rat, and never really put it together on the defensive end. And the fact that Sexton has improved his scoring, he's improved his playmaking, and improved his defense right now coming into the season is just incredible. Like, he's setting franchise records for consecutive 20-point games. Like, he is at another level. And the exciting part to me is I assume the shooting numbers are going to come down a bit. Like, he's not going to
have to. He's not going to be a 46% three-point shooter.
Yeah, no, he's at like 47% and 52% from the floor. Like, that's going to come down a little bit. But the exciting thing with Sexton is he always gets better as the season progresses. And even if those numbers are coming down, I think you're going to see continued growth in playmaking. I think you're going to see it on the defensive end. And, like, the sky's the limit for this kid at this time. Like, the reality is it looks like the Cavs hit on three consecutive top 10 picks. Like, and added a guy that you would easily take. Like, if Jared Allen was in the draft and we're picking fifth this past year, that is someone we would be excited about taking. Like, he has already kind of proven himself to be a hell of a player, and it looks like you have four foundational guys that are all 22 and under.
Yeah, I still think I don't want to move to the Okoro conversation just yet, because I do want to stick on Sexton. I'm not. I think Okoro still has to prove it a little bit more. But he is playing just amazing defense for a rookie. So I very much believe in that. But yeah,
he's playing amazing defense for an NBA player.
Yeah, for sure. I will say this about Sexton. You know, I think really the last thing he has to do to be a no doubter elite offensive player, which he's already pretty much there, is the free throws. But I believe that he can get there. I mean, he plays very, very physically. And if he learns how to get to the line at a better rate, that's been the last fly in the ointment for him. Cause he's cut out the mid rangers that are not necessary. He has upped his 3-point rate. It's still not quite where we want it to be. I mean, Chris Manning's been on this for, you know, our friend of the pod, host of Lockdown Cavs, has been on the fact that he wants Colin to take more pull-up threes. I think, you know, we pushed back on that when we did our joint podcast with him, but after the Brooklyn game, I'm like, maybe Chris was right. And, you know, but once he starts getting to the line, and because he's a good free throw shooter, I mean, he just starts to get pretty unguardable pretty quick. I mean, I mentioned this on Twitter. The most impressive play to me in that crazy double overtime spree was when he got into the lane and then took a fadeaway Dirk knee in the air 10-footer that just was, I knew was cash right away. I mean, when you have the in-between game, and it's funny because I think a lot of people think the in-between game is 15 to 18 footers. I think it's actually 10 to 15 footers.
Mm-hmm.
Because when defenses are so geared around stopping you from scoring at the rim and scoring from three, that 10 to 15 foot space is wide open right now. And if Sexton's able to consistently score there via touch jumpers and floaters, man, he's just impossible to guard.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And to your point about the 3-point shooting, like, it's 4.7 now. I think if it's just over five, I think that's the sweet spot, because before he wasn't even getting up a full four a game. If it's like at five to six, I would like to see that. But I do think part of why the percentage is so high is the shot selection, which we pointed out before.
Sure.
I am going to reprise my role as dumb fan. And I will say, now that Sexton's getting attention, like, Mark Spears did a feature on him, Jonathan Jarks did a feature on him, like, he's getting national attention, I think that's going to help his free throw rate, because it's a reality of the NBA that there are star calls, and he has not been getting the calls that you would expect someone that scores at that level. And I really
spends as much time on the floor as he does.
Yeah. Like, this guy is a bowling ball, and like, he's finishing the plays, but a lot of those plays are going to start turning into and ones. And I think we even started to see that a little bit in the Brooklyn game. But as he gets more attention, like, this was a guy that was not even ranked in the top 100 by ESPN, didn't get first selection for the Rising Star games over guys like Looney or Paschal or whoever the hell else was in that. Like, now that he's getting attention, it wouldn't surprise me to see him start getting those star calls. And if that free throw rate is going up, he might be able to maintain the efficiency he's doing right now, even as the percentages come back to a more human level.
Yeah, and bear in mind here, guys, the Cavaliers still don't have Kevin Love, who makes offense easier.
Oh my God.
For every player on the roster. I mean, he is their only real route right now, barring some more boldness from Dylan Windler, which, by the way, my favorite part about Dylan Windler's game, and I do want to talk about him too. God, we're going to go for 2 hours if we do this. Anyway, my favorite part about Dylan Windler's game right now that I've been kind of wanting to see is just pull, just rip. So when he pulled in transition above the break on that three, I was like, that's exactly what the Cavs need. Right now, Kevin Love's the only one who does that in volume right now. And while Larry Nance has hit a very respectable amount from three, is a great, you know, connect the dots playmaker, no one's really guarding him yet. Yeah. People guard Kevin Love. I mean, imagine our first spread pick and roll with Darius and Jared Allen, or Sexton and Jared Allen, with shooters on the floor. It's this team's going to be really, really good. I don't know, man. I'm having a hard time not spiraling about how good this team is, because it's not like we've just, you know, when they beat Philly without Embiid, I was like, okay, that's a fluky win. And then they were hurt for a while. They were, you know, try-harding their way to wins, but seeing this blend of try hard and talent returning back to the floor, it's making it hard for me not to, you know, go into dreamland about how good this team is going to be the rest of this year.
Yeah, I mean, 5 of their 8 wins have come against teams that are currently in the playoff picture, and that comes shorthanded. Like, that's pretty damn impressive. And I got to say, like, I love seeing Kevin Love being so engaged on the sideline. Like, Darius jumping on his shoulders was so much fun. And like,
Calf looks pretty good.
He's buying in a little bit, and like, I would kind of love to see the situation change, where it kind of mutual understanding that, you know what, maybe it's better off for him to finish off his career in another spot. It'd be really funny to see it go from he's not getting moved because it's difficult with that much term on his contract to he's not getting moved because he's bought in and it's working out. Like, that would be a really fun change. And it's exciting because, I mean, we've talked about how Kevin Porter Jr. no longer part of this team. He was like plan B to Sexton working out, right? Like, he was kind of viewed as a shooting guard of the future. And now you kind of have more answers than you would have expected this early on about what that pairing is. And in addition to that, you have guys that are perfect fits defensively for that kind of a guard pairing in Isaac Okoro, Jared Allen, and even Larry Nance Jr., even if he's coming off the bench as kind of that third big and splitting minutes evenly with Kevin Love, kind of the Draymond role that he's filled so well this year. Like, that team makes a lot of sense, and it's a really exciting place to be in when you have four guys that fit together, that make sense. And I mean, we talked about it coming into this year. What we wanted to see from this season was growth from Sexton, growth from Garland, and a vision from Kobe Altman on what this team is going to be. And I'm starting to learn what this team is. And man, I did not expect that end of January to be over 500 and feeling really, really solid about the foundation that this team has built.
Yeah, and it's funny, regarding Kevin Love, he was, when, and we've argued this ad nauseum with, you know, with national people, with local people, the idea that the Cavs did Kevin Love wrong by signing him to this extension and then immediately going into the shitter, you know, tank, you know, going very youth movement, getting rid of their vets. And, you know, we've heard it from Channing Frye. We've kind of, you know, we've heard it reported through Kevin Love that he felt hard done. it's kind of funny that the idea that we could circle back to making good on the promise to Kevin Love that they're going to try to compete. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The idea that he can come back and it seems like he likes this team. You know, it seems like he's got some allies and, you know, Larry Nance, someone who he really likes to and is close with. And, you know, this is where it's funny. The onus kind of shifts back to Kev, which is, you know, assuming he gets healthy, which is the number one priority. The poor guy's been rehabbing for, you know, months, it seems. But now it's like, hey, we've got a team that's competing. That seems fun to play with. That is potentially waiting on you to help them be a playoff team. So what are you going to do to, you know, fully buy in? I think it's actually really fun. It's a great opportunity for Kev to kind of be that final piece to make this team take another mini leap. And he fits perfectly. The theoretical Kev fits perfectly on this team. And I'm really, really excited to see him get to play on a winner again.
Yeah, and I think the thing with Kevin Love is he's a competitor, right? And it frustrated him when this team wasn't winning. And
wasn't competitive.
And the thing that I've appreciated is, like, when he's had the slip-ups, he's talked about it. Like, hey, that was kind of a weak spot from a leadership standpoint. Like, I'm not trying to be that guy, but, like, I'm a competitor. And as things got better at the end of last season, you could tell, like, he was playing harder, he was trying on defense. And it really turns into a situation now where, like, it might work out with him, or it might turn into a situation where he's playing really well, the team's clicking, we get into the playoffs, and you come into the summer where there's a kind of mutually beneficial situation where he can go to a different winning situation and the Cavs get a good piece that can help out their future, or it can work together as a partnership. So I think it's a really interesting spot. I'm excited to see him come back in the lineup. Theoretically, you're probably just looking at the timeline that the team gave, maybe the end of the month or early February. So that would be really fun to see. But, you know, it as you said, it's a really good situation. And, like, I'm excited to see what this team looks like when it's full bars, full lineup, and everything's clicking. Like, if they get a win against the Celtics or Lakers here, because now Boston actually has their dudes back, man, we're going to be pretty obnoxious on Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean, I'm already feeling pretty obnoxious right now. I just like what this team is right now, because while we know Drummond isn't here for the long term, what we have is so many options for JB Bickerstaff to play around with. Mm-hmm. So many different kinds of lineups that do different sorts of things. When Kevin Love comes back, there will be lineups where Larry Nance is better against certain teams. And there will be lineups where Kevin Love is really important. And what's nice is, sure, eventually there's going to be grumbles, especially among vets like Andre Drummond. You know, people noticed he wasn't super thrilled during the double OT game while he was benched. And he's got professional pride. I don't know what, I'm not here to kill the guy for that.
No,
though,
I get it.
Though, you know, obviously you want everyone to be Timofey Mozgov in the 2016 finals, just along for the ride, super. So I mean, we've even seen that from JaVale, who has been completely cut out of the rotation, despite very much deserving to be an NBA rotation player. It's just the situation.
I love,
you know,
that
eventually
guy.
Eventually there will be some grumbles, I'm sure. But, you know, in the interim, JB gets to do whatever he wants to win games. And that's really, really fun. He gets to play whatever lineups he wants. If Darius doesn't have it one day, okay, if Sexton's your point guard, you slide Jetty at the two, Okoro at the three, or Windler at the three. Like, he just can do whatever he wants. And this team has 10 real NBA players to play at any given time, all with a different set of strengths, all with a different set of weaknesses. So he can mix and match based on the matchup and get the kind of play the Cavs need.
Yeah, and you know what? We almost should save the parts about whether or not they should be going for a playoff for Tuesday's podcast, just because, one, we're going long here, and also, like, the possibility of another win over these next two would just kind of take it to another level, or kind of sober us up, which sometimes we do need.
No.
But it certainly is a really exciting time to be a Cavs fan. I'm going to be very curious, because you know they're active on the trade market. This team always is. This team's always looking to improve. And to your point earlier, like, The Cavs have kind of been making good on what their promise was to Kevin Love, which was that they were going to be competitive. Like, the Andre Drummond move was not a tanking move. Like, this team has been looking to grow organically, to always add pieces that help accentuate what the young guys are. So I anticipate that they'll continue to do that. I think they'll continue to look to add long-term pieces. So really, really exciting time to be a Cavs fan. I'm trying to figure out what I want to speak into existence now, because, man, like, I always think
you need to be responsible with your powers, I guess.
I really do. Let's actually talk about this for a second, because I like to think that I realistically paint a situation and then skew towards an optimistic view of what the future is going to be. But, like, I don't just say things to say them. Like, I didn't predict playoffs. I predicted 27 wins, but I was still excited about what the young guys could bring to the table. Man, like, I don't want to, like, victory lap and say I was right, but I'm looking pretty right now, Carter.
Yeah, I mean, I thought I was being pretty balanced, you know, maybe counterbalancing your optimism with a 27th best team. But, like, you know, I was trying to, like, just hedge and kind of say, like, hey, you know, I think that this team will be more competitive, but, like, they just probably won't be able to close games. Well, look at them. They're closing games. They're, Colin Sexton's going bananas in a double overtime game. You've got someone like Kyrie Irving, who looked like he was ready just to take over and win Brooklyn the game for stretches last mm-hmm. night. And the Cavs just said, no, we're just going to keep scoring and we're going to hold you at bay. This team has had so many times where they could have mailed it in and kind of just bailed on the game. I really think the only game that's happened was the Utah game, when they were just completely depleted. Most of the time they've just kept coming at teams and refused to kind of go quietly into the night. And it's just really, really fun culturally. I mean, how many times have we said in the post-LeBron era, how many podcasts have we logged on and just said, man, would it be just fun to be a team that is more than the sum of their parts? And man, would it be fun to get to overperform for a run instead of, you know, kind of just like being the sum of their parts? Because even there were times in the LeBron era, the second LeBron era, where you're like, this team is great, but they're not like, they're not more than what they are. They're just bananas talented. Yeah. This feels like something that could be sustainable. You know, we talk about what we want the Cavs to be. If this Cavs team becomes the Pacers of the last 10 years, where you are just constantly competitive, no matter who's coming in, who's coming out, that's what I would really love to see. And I think that this is the first step towards that. And you know what? There will be people who complain about hurting your odds for Cade Cunningham. And I get it.
Yeah.
But man, is it fun to see competence and a step beyond that, which is what we've seen the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it really does remind me of the Pacers situation, where after they traded Paul George, everyone thought that they were going to be the worst team in the league. And they just developed players. And it's exciting to be in a situation where the Cavs have established a culture and they have five guys that fit that culture perfectly. And the exciting part is, even with the schedule,
and they're all kids, baby. They're all 20.
Well, not Nance, but, you know, 28. He's still got good years left in him. But the exciting part is, like, especially with this player development staff, with the work ethic that Garland, Sexton, Okoro, and Allen have, these guys are just going to get better from here. So it's a really, really awesome place to be at. And you know what? We're also going to get better throughout the year. I believe in us, Carter. I want to thank all of our listeners. Hope you guys are having as much fun watching the Cavs as we are right now. If you want to support the podcast and get on this enthusiasm train, leave us a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Downs exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Buy a Sexland shirt. Stay safe out there,
guys. Selling like hotcakes, baby.
Selling like hotcakes. The movement is real. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. Until next time, go Cavs.